The opinions expressed on Ann's Time do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Impro Mafia, but just because I'm wholly accountable for my actions isn't going to stop me.
Impro Mafia presents Ann's Time! Welcome to Ann's Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's tech boy.
I'm Natalie Bohensky, at last count was president of this charade operation, and media person as well. Forgive us, it's been a big weekend.
And I'm David Massingham, I'm a rank and file member of Impro Mafia, with no special powers, and also a member of the Sexy Detective Sketch Comedy Troupe.
Excellent, welcome guys. Then we've got three mics today, so the levels will be all over the damn shop.
Yes, hooray. It should be good, excellent.
First, let's get straight into it, into the week of Impro, or the last, what, 3.5 weeks?
It's been a while since the last podcast. Much has happened.
Yes. First and foremost, we had a grudge match comedy football show.
We did. It was the Chupacabras versus the Sea Monkeys.
Yes, it was a disappointing showing from the Chupacabras, unfortunately.
So there have been three shows this year, and each team has won one. Which is wonderful politically.
Yes.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Just freaking great. Chupacabras look poised to win two. Damn it.
Snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah. And yet, I've won 100% of the nights that I've played there this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many nights?
You're not invited very
there?
Often, are you?
No.
Maybe in the scheme of things, Dan, you are the bigger winner.
Yeah.
No, that's not to say grudge match has been great. Our last grudge match had this odd feeling to it, I think primarily because Matt Hadgraft was unable to attend and we weren't able to get any other musician at the last minute. So it was a show with no music. And so we had our introductory theme music and just general filler music for halftime and interval, rather. I always say that.
It's comedy football. It's supposed to be halftime.
Yes, well, that's true. It's justified in that sense. But
I would wait to bring oranges.
I think we're also used to having a musician now, that the absence of that just little undercurrent of energy really had this bizarre effect on the room. And
it's a strange night.
We had about 25 to 30 people there, but most of them were all friends and fellow improvisers. And I felt that a lot of the audience didn't seem to be enjoying it. But subsequently, I've had people tell me they thought it was a great show and they really had fun.
Not everyone I spoke to said that.
Oh, really?
No, but, most of the people I heard who said that were backstage with me, rehearsing.
Well, the thing about that night was, my memory is that the audience weren't really, they were pretty nonplussed. But we had a ball up.
Yes.
We would be talking over the MC.
Yes.
It was a very selfish
God, that was
evening.
Fun.
Yeah. Yes, it was. What fun we had.
Because you were emceeing, weren't you, Nat?
I was emceeing, and I really enjoy emceeing, and I don't mean to embiggen myself, but I think I'm a relatively decent MC, but I could not handle any of these blokes at all that night. They were just going crazy.
We were having fun.
Talking over me, everything. Oh, it was jokes upon jokes upon jokes. I found it quite difficult. So I think matched with the weird energy of the room and the audience and then this overly verbose player base, it was quite a bizarre night. Like, I still had heaps of fun.
Mm. It wasn't a night of good impro, though, because, you know, good impro doesn't see like...
good impro was the loser.
Jason Comedy was dead, baby.
I still think there were strong moments, I'm struggling to recall any of
the
them.
The one that I can recall is I remember there was a challenge round. I, as the team captain of the Chupacabras, challenged the Sea Monkeys to do a scene. It was a physical challenge.
Yes.
And I said, in this scene, one person is not allowed to touch the stage. Their feet is not allowed to touch the stage.
That's right. That was inspired.
And then Tom goes, all right, well, could I get the other team to please lie on the stage? And then the rest of the scene had Dan walking all over us as Jesus walking on
Indeed.
Water.
Indeed. And that was a very strange scene to be in because I was like, I don't want to harm any of my friends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, now which ones have got back problems?
See, now Greg, who loves having his back harshly manipulated, was probably quite enjoying having your feet walking up and down his spine.
I think he mentioned that at the end of the scene.
Yeah. So what's good for some, not good for others. Yeah. But
there was also a really fun fairy tale, which was, I think, everybody was in. Was that was really nice. Had a really nice... It was one it was moment both. Of the evening where we had a beginning, a middle, and an end.
That was Tom Dunstan in a beautiful moment strangling cats.
Breaking their necks and throwing them into a gorge.
Breaking cats' necks and then throwing them into a gorge. And for some reason, that was his task. And he's like, I've still got 400 cats to do. He just had to break their necks. And it was just a wonderful thing that Tom does with just sort of very simple but effective miming. Just... Arrk!
You actually did something as the MC there, which is one of my cardinal sins as an MC.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Yeah. Tell me all my problems.
I will. I'll tell you this one. You asked for an offer from the audience, and it was a colour. And when you want an offer from the audience, you want something you can draw on. And it's so rare in a scene for the colour of a mimed item to be relevant to the story.
In that one, it was, though.
No, it wasn't.
It was Puce.
It was Puce.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Puce. And that was, at the very least, some stupid jokes came out of it. Which is in my book. But it slowed down the story.
It's justification enough.
Yes, but those jokes could have been the exact same jokes if the colour had been mauve or... So yeah,
mauve. I think you find Dan.
Yeah, let's put all the flaws at Dan now. Can't pronounce mauve.
I can see this is going to be a very antagonistic.
This was supposed
podcast.
To be one sided.
It can't be one sided in a three cornered debate, Master Beeston. Look, a fun show, and sadly we're wrapping things up at Stage Door Dinner Theatre. It's been a great venue for us, and we really enjoyed it, but we just.
But not great enough, apparently.
No, it's not that. And it's one of those hard decisions that you have to make as a company. And I know it really has cost Wade a lot of sleep because he's invested so much time into promoting the show and trying to
make it work. And a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, look, we've been doing Facebook advertising, which has cost us a grand total of $16. And let's face it.
Sorry, I thought you said it cost a grand. What?
Dave, the global financial crisis has not missed Impro Mafia. but what I mean is that Wade really went out of his way to find new ways to promote the show. And unfortunately, we just haven't been able to get people to that venue. And we think it's probably because we haven't come up with the right show for that venue. Grudge Match is obviously just not right for that particular venue. But we really think that it's a great venue for improv, and we'd like to do more there in the future. But rather than try to flog a dead horse, we want to wrap it up. We're going to have a massive final on the 21st of June coming up. So be there. And then we are going to, I guess, keep that venue as a possibility
show that's more suited to the style of that.
Look,
venue,
I think so.
It's a very idiocratic venue. Yeah, it's not like any other one we perform.
They they're a dinner theatre, so they tend to do a lot of shows. Like their current show is called Stiff, which is about four prostitutes who take over a funeral parlour.
Oh, the levels.
Yes.
Stiff.
And so. But what I mean is they tend to do really big event night type shows that people will organise a big table for their friends, and they'll all go out and see the show on a Friday, Saturday night and make it a big evening. So I think we need to try and work out what that market wants, and then we can develop a show for that market. But look, we've given it a go, and I think the quality of the playing has been of a very consistently good standard.
Except for last week.
I think, well, the last week was just a bit of an anomaly, I feel. But
yeah,
I
agree. Usually the shows have a pretty strong.
Yeah, and I think that we just sometimes, you can't keep going on with something that's just not working to everyone's best intent. That sentence didn't even make sense, but I think you can understand.
I'll make it make sense in post.
Some kind of power of our speech in this thing.
I can just chop up words and get the grammar right.
Yeah. Dan is so hot. I love Dan. He's hot. That wasn't edited. I've just got a vocal problem.
And a vision problem as well.
Oh, come on.
And a bizarre,
it's just there.
I go out of my way. I invite you onto the show. It seems weird to call this a show.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's just more of my lounge room, isn't it?
Anyway, the point is,
Improv.
Stage Door has been a wonderful venue. They've been very, very good to us, and we'd love to work with them again in the future. But for now, we're
fucking them all.
Pursuing other options.
Other options is yes.
In the fullness of time, we will look at the issues and, on balance, decide what move to take, what chess piece to move. It's my dignified response as a president and as a journalist. So, yes, and then I don't think we've had any performances since then.
No,
until last night.
I did go to the Edge Impro Series final. Wade and I.
Oh, okay.
Just down there.
Yeah, yes.
So just a shout out to Edge and all the people who worked hard on the series at Kitty O'Shea's. Well, let's move on
to
Agatha Holmes,
yes,
I believe.
Last night's arts theatre show.
Yes.
Which I think has been the only thing we've been working on since that Grudge Match show in May.
I believe that is correct.
Although a few people, I think, have been doing Impro Gladiators.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. No, so there has been Impro Gladiators shows.
People turning up there randomly.
Yes. I did one there, I think.
Oh, we had our corporate gig. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
We had our corporate gig.
There's a lot of improv, really.
Yeah, it's not actually been that quiet. We did a night for Rotary, for the Rotarians over at the Queensland Cricketers Club.
And I was always a very, very big fan of their phones.
Of their
Phones. I was against
he's
it when
too
they
young.
Bought it.
He won't understand.
No, I got it now. It took me a couple more seconds.
You can see, like,
I actually had that gag all poised to go just in case I needed it on the night. Nice little phone gag to amuse the Rotarians.
Is Dan saying... hang on. Revelation. Is Dan saying that he pre-planned something for Impro? King of...
Oh, we shouldn't be pre-planning. We shouldn't be pre-planning anything.
I didn't know I was the king of that.
I don't know why I'm talking like this. Does Dan sound like this?
Yes. Like a transvestite?
Hello, I'm Dan. What?
My point is, we did a corporate gig for the Rotarians at the Queensland Cricketers Club on the wettest day in southeast Queensland... For 17 years. It was raining cats and dogs.
Very pretty stadium. They turned the lights on. I've never been in the Gabba before.
Haven't you?
It's fucking huge.
It's amazing.
Big, isn't it? Yeah.
That's a big grassy field.
Do you know,
it's a
I really
big patch of green.
It is.
One day I'm going to organise it so we can all go to an AFL game together. Because I honestly think improvisers
would enjoy. I'm going to go along to that.
Let me tell you why. Because
that's the Australian Football League.
It is a legally sanctioned outlet for sledging, abuse, personal comments, and no one will ever take you up on it. Unless you're overtly racist, of course.
That's what this podcast is for.
Well, okay, fine. But you can sit at the football, wearing your little scarf, having your light beer, and just yell things like, oh, what was that? What? Oh, not ref! I don't know anything about football, but just being able to sit in a stand and yell random things at strangers, it's quite uplifting.
Natalie likes to talk.
Okay, I'll shut up then. Next minute of this podcast has no input from me. Starting now.
I would rather die than go to an AFL game.
Well, no, I'm saying AFL because AFL is a lot more enjoyable than like rugby league.
Is it? Oh, yeah, no, it probably is. Yes. They're both pretty awful. I don't like organised sport.
Curling. We should get everyone together and go to a curling match.
Roller skating.
Roller derby. That's all the violent all the roller rage skating nowadays.
Roller derby stuff.
Yeah.
Well, just roller skating.
Is that just chicks skating around and bashing each other?
All women. That's understand. Hot. Teams. Yeah, I think just they're kind of
short
rolling
shorts
around and there's a whole retro glam thing going on with it as well. I haven't seen it myself.
Those tight little one of the latex pants where just the very bottom of the bum pokes out the bottom.
You study them closely, I see.
I read about it once. Your Honour.
Playboy. yes, I believe those are the ones.
Right.
I just think it would be amusing to get Impro Mafia players outside of the world of Impro doing something else. I think that would be quite fun. As in something else, you know, like going to paintball or something once. And
paintball I could do.
I know a few of us have done Laser Force.
I'm terrible at Laser Force.
Oh, I am too, but again, you just get to like...
No, I'm terrible at it.
But not Dan. 12-year-old boys go running around. You can seriously trip them and then accidentally bash them with your gun. They're not going to see you.
And accidentally get sued.
No. It's part of the game.
I don't know whether you fully understand the concept of Laser Force being a non-contact. Like, the point of them being lasers means that no one actually gets shot even with a paintball gun.
Sure. And I'm with you.
Yeah.
You know, peace, love, happiness. Yeah. 14-year-old boys running around going, get her! Get her! She's slow! Get her! I'm sorry, but occasionally my gun slips.
All right.
Whoops! Sorry.
I don't know. Obviously, this 14-year-old said something about the one with the big hips, and suddenly he's lying on the ground bleeding from the, the noggin. Yeah.
Why are we talking about this? Agatha Holmes.
Agatha Holmes.
So are we done with the corporate gig?
Well, do you want to talk about the corporate gig?
It was very good.
There are lots of less.
I performed at Impro Gladiators recently.
Yeah,
after you guys did. I was the last cab off the rank. It's weak. They called me up and they said, Dan, we want you to be involved. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And they go, oh, and could you give us the contact details for Greg and Nat? And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that'll be great too. They invited them first.
It was just a scheduling.
No, I'm holding a grudge.
Are you going
to
hold
a grudge? No. But my point was it was a different type of audience to the one I'm used to.
Yes.
And
a different audience.
I was throwing out lines to the audience thinking, oh, this is quite a strong idea that has a wonderful comic premise that the audience is going to enjoy. And I'd throw it out there.
Sorry, a comic what?
Premise.
Mauve.
A comic mauve.
A comic mauve or a comic premise?
Premise? No, you're probably right about that, aren't you?
Probably.
I hate to pull rank with you, but I probably am. Not pulling rank, but you're really wrong. I hate to be that guy, Dan. I hate to be the guy
who
corrects your pronunciation. And it's pronunciation, it's not pronunciation. You hear a lot of people saying that these days. You're not pronouncing that correctly. No, that's right.
That is right.
Pronounce.
Yes!
Okay, pronouncing. That's where they get confused because they say pronouncing and then they go to pronunciation. And that's wrong.
Fair enough.
Sorry, Dan.
Skiing down
your
the
comic
tangent.
Premise.
And then it was completely quiet. I threw this thing out there and nothing. No reaction at all.
Mm.
And seriously, 2.5 seconds went by. And then everyone went click and figured out what had happened. And the audience laughed and it was ended up being like nominated for a magic moment or something. Mm. But it was just odd because I'm so used to throwing something out there, which is, it's not really clever either. Mm. It's a little bit clever that requires one step to get to. Mm. But our audience is usually like, ah! And these guys are like, ah!
It was you're saying a sit-down audience is
dumb
than your average
I
audience.
Did actually say dumber, but that was just for comic intent. Mm. So, but yeah, it is
not,
odd.
Not it's comic a, intent.
All right, look, I've had just about enough of
this.
No high-fiving on my show.
Sorry.
I'm,
sorry,
I thought you I'm were sorry. Staying neutral, Dave.
I'm going whichever way the wind blows. If you turn it on Nat, maybe I'll join in.
He's Sweden in this ongoing conflict.
Well, maybe we should talk about the shit pile show that was Agatha Holmes.
Dan wasn't in Agatha Holmes.
Dan wasn't invited.
I reckon that I would have made a better fop than Michael because I would have shaved my face. Fops don't wear beards.
No, they don't. That's true. But I wasn't about to ask Michael to shave his beard.
You could have asked. Like, he could have said no.
No.
Michael seems to think that his face looks odd without a beard.
Oh, yeah, no, it looks terrible without a beard.
Oh, no, don't say that. I can't remember. It's been so long
since
I've seen him.
It's been a while since I remember. I can't remember at all, but now it's like the beard is so ingrained in the image that
he's Michael Griffin. The beard is essentially chin now. It's not a beard. It's just.
I remember when he had no beard and he had longer hair.
Yeah.
And then he sort of grew up a thin beard.
Yes, that's right.
And shaved his hair really thin, and suddenly he looks like the lead singer of Smash Mouth or something.
Smash Mouth?
Yeah.
Wow. Old school.
Suddenly he's getting it working.
That's really 1998 of you, Dan. It's fantastic.
Hey now.
No. Honestly, that was my
Smash
music.
Mouth. I don't remember them.
Might as well
be walking on the
side. That was the highlight for them. They died after that. All Star's a bit wank, really, isn't it?
All Star was before Walking on the Sun, wasn't it?
No,
Walking on the Sun was the first. That was a breakthrough.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But then All Star was in every single freaking movie.
Oh, everyone would have had in that. You know what that song now is? Grace Kelly by Mika.
I like that song.
It's a great song, but all these Hollywood films have gone, we want something that sounds kind of quirky and uplifting to be our opening credit sequence number. I've seen it in so many films. Yeah. They have nothing to do.
Really?
It has no real relation to the film, apart from the fact someone's gone, that would be a great song to have at the start of this romantic comedy.
Yeah, romantic comedy.
Starring Cameron Diaz. Not to point any fingers, but I'm looking at you, Cameron.
Bitch.
Stupid comedy. Rom-com. Sorry. Agatha Holmes.
Did you say rom-com?
I did, yeah.
Good. I won't be editing that out.
I was about to say romance.
Though in order for that to make sense, you can't edit out the times that you said silly things about this podcast. So it's a catch-22 there.
There is.
Fine. I'm going down, but I'm taking you with me.
That's a fair point.
Agatha Holmes! Let's go.
Agatha Holmes, an entire long-form improv show based on a fairly flawed, three-minute game premise.
Well, the premise.
Oh, damn it!
I thought he was taking the piss.
Anywho, as Dan has just pointed out, Agatha Holmes was originally conceived as a short form game. Basically, I can't remember. An endowments game, yeah. I can't remember whether it was Michael or I who came up with it. It was probably the two of us in conversation. It was probably more my desire to see an actual murder mystery related game, because I love murder mysteries.
Because it is just murder endowments.
It is. Well, that game was talking, we were talking about murder endowments. Yep. Well, why is this game, which usually is okay, but it's not great, why? For me, it would be a lot more interesting to see it from the point of view of, instead of somebody going off stage and being the murderer and having to come back on and work out who they have to kill and what weapon they have to kill them with and where they are,
mm-hmm.
It would be much more interesting if they have to be the detective. And they come back on and someone has died and they have to work out who did the killing, what was murder weapon, and then where they were when they were killed. So that was the original idea, and that's why it was a short-form game. Quickly became apparent when playing this game, and I would put it in whenever I was emceeing, and it always failed, was that it needs a lot more time than 3.5 minutes to expand upon. So it was shelved, essentially. And then I've been talking for years about how I want to make it a long-form, and now it is! Though actually
well
once,
done.
When Luke Rimmelswein, who was in the show last night, and I were doing a play together, for some reason,
in a rehearsal as a warm-up. It was like it's a character working exercise. We decided to do an Agatha Holmes long form. Nothing to do with improv, mm-hmm. the show. It was like a scripted theatre piece. But we took our characters and did it as if it was an Agatha Holmes. I can't remember why, but it was quite entertaining.
So it was like the germ of the idea there.
That was, yeah. So it's been forever been talked about doing announced. Now it's happened.
Well, I think we probably rehearsed for this not as much as Prognosis Death, but probably more. I think we had three rehearsals.
We had three rehearsals, yeah.
I think for most of our long forms, we've had two mm-hmm. this year anyway.
Yeah. There's the first rehearsal where it all goes pear-shaped.
Yeah.
The second bit where we solve all those problems and introduce a whole bunch of new problems. And then the and night the where somehow it all manages to come together.
No, actually, our third one was possibly our weakest.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, that's not true. It was fine. But we were all, just before it, we'd been at the costume hire and we were all like, searching around for costumes for like an hour and a half. So I think by the time we got to the actual work, the actual long form, that third rehearsal, we were all pretty scattered.
It's really difficult, the issue of rehearsing, because you don't want to over-rehearse with improv. You really, you know, like with the play, you can rehearse and rehearse to get things just so and to get a real tightness and everything. But with these shows, you do want to keep that spontaneity. Yeah.
And what you're essentially rehearsing is you're rehearsing the form.
Yes.
And like you're making sure you know what things will work within the form. And, you know, okay, well, if we're going to show the murder at the end of the first half,
we can't really do it
with like the lights on as we found out during one rehearsal. So, but
it's all about that the technical stuff of according to the genre, what do we need to achieve? You know, what is the audience going to expect? How do we get to that point?
Mm. And in the case of this particular one, also playing around with characters because we all had, like Prognosis Death, we all had set characters.
Somebody mentioned last night that they thought all of our character relationships were established.
That's not true.
And that's not true.
No.
And
except for, well, the central way the show works is that there's Agatha Holmes and his assistant Wastings, and they've got to go into the English countryside to solve a murder, and the first half is Agatha Holmes being told what happened, so it's basically lead up to the murder, and the second half is Agatha Holmes arriving and solving the murder. And so there was a relationship already between myself, who I played Wastings, and Greg, who played Agatha Holmes. So that relationship, we'd begun to rehearse a bit. But all the other relationships changed as soon as we found out who the murderer was for that evening and who the victim was.
The fun thing is the person who said that they thought that your relationships were already set up was Andy Foreman, and he's been doing improv for like 22 years. So yeah, it's nice to think that we showed him something that he's never seen before.
Well, hopefully, but I don't know. You never know whether that's a credit to you or a bit of a problem, because you want people to know that it has been improvised, but you also want them to
be as polished as possible.
Exactly. To look as schmick as you can. Yeah. So when people say, oh, you must have scripted it, I think Michael said this last night afterwards, it's both an incredible credit and also very disheartening.
Yes.
At the same time, that's sort of your ideal result, really.
Yeah.
As far as performing in it, it was a joy. It was really, really wonderful and really aided, I think, in this case, by having a great set in place for us to use.
Yeah.
Hero's Funeral is the current play on at the Arts Theatre. We were able to throw in a few other pieces of furniture and some more paintings to bring it from a mid-90s set to a 1920s set.
It looked really good.
And it really suited the genre.
When it came on, for a moment I caught myself thinking, hang on, how did they manage to put so much money into Agatha Holmes? They've got a proper set for it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wait a second. No, Nat's version of Falafel is over. So, it's probably a boring play with a boring set that looks just like this and is perfect for the Agatha Holmes.
This is the thing. It's something we really need to hopefully look at next year, is if we do time our shows, making sure we sort of work out what's on and go right.
If we were doing it when Falafel was on and Agatha Holmes in a share house is tratty.
To be fair, but we did do, or you guys did, All Together Now while Falafel was on.
Yes, that's true.
And we just had the stage blacked out. Yes, so you just had a plain stage, and we would have just had a plain stage, but it wouldn't have had that
sound. And that worked very well for Prognosis Death as well.
In fact,
Prognosis Death, I think, is probably preferable because you're changing location so often.
Yes.
And blood got over quite a lot of the curtains, and it's nice that it didn't get over someone else's set.
Yes.
The stagehands were quite... quite careful about making sure we understood just how little they wanted blood over the Jack and the Beanstalk set.
Yes.
Well,
when the giant falls down at the end, all this blood went everywhere. See,
apparently, little kitties and showing them blood—it's not done. So we had to be careful. Agatha Holmes, I think, really benefited from having that sense of place that set gave. And so when everyone walked on in their wonderful 1920s costumes—and this is the thing about the theatre—they just have such a great range of costumes that we have access to. It really does give us an incredible advantage. in our long form work to be able to access that, because it just it gives that edge of believability. So people are going to go, well, yes, this looks like a 1920s set, and yes, they're dressed appropriately, so I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of fun things in there as well. Like Michael, his fop, is wearing this straw boater and with this hard, hard edge. He's got this sweater around his shoulders with a little dinky bow tie and this badminton racket. He just looks like he wanted to give him a lollipop. So Greg had the Sherlock Holmes cloak, which was fantastic.
And you were in your morning suit.
And morning suit.
Very dapper. When,
I like the fact that Greg's uniform consisted of a hip flask with which he actually put whiskey into and kept swinging from throughout the show.
If I can just step in on Greg's behalf here and say it was method acting, that was his.
Well, he also brought out some, what was snuff. he called thinking powder.
Can I tell you what that was? He came in before the show. He was getting ready, and he was like, "Oh, I'm going to use this." And I said, "Oh, you should have other stuff." And he went off and he found this little box, and he came back and went, "This box, look, I can put something in it." And I went, "I'll put talcum powder in it or something." So basically, before the show, he went off and gathered whatever equipment he could find to secrete about his person to pull out whenever he needed some sort of, you know, drug assisted
I took away his whiskey, and then later on he takes out the laudanum. And then on he takes out the thinking powder. It goes all over his costume.
I think there was the audience just loved Agatha Holmes. They just adored him, because there was one moment where he was like sniffing this talcum powder and it went all over his front.
And he looked so desperate while he was doing it. He knew that I was going to come over and try to take it off.
Was it you who said it's too much thinking powder? Or I think he said it in response to something that was happening. He went, "Oh, too much thinking powder." Or I just paused and looked at the audience and went, "Not enough." And then started sniffing powder again. And the audience just went nuts for it.
The reason that the Agatha Holmes character worked so well from my point of view in the audience was that...
Bitterly. With Leah-like bitterness.
We do it again. You could be in it, so stop me a bit of time.
I could be Mr. Body.
Yeah.
I could die in the first 5 minutes. The original group of characters are also sort of staid British people from the story.
Yeah.
But then you throw a hand grenade, like Greg Robot.
He's a loose cannon.
As such a frenetic
force
entered into the show.
The interesting thing as well is that the endowment aspect of the original game was kept.
Mm-hmm.
Greg actually didn't know.
Yes, we should point this out.
For people who were watching it, and I don't think we made it clear enough, I did a couple of things when I was, because we were out in the audience, out in the courtyard beforehand, handing out little sheets that people filled out, and they'd circle who they want to be the murderer, and who they want to be the victim, and we'd sort of tally it up. So they chose who the victim and the murderer was, but still didn't know who it was, so that kind of kept that, you know, whodunit atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But Greg actually did not know those things either. So he was actually in front of the audience all the time, I think.
Pretty much.
Yeah, he went out with the audience during the interval, and he stood with them in the audience before the show. And he didn't know, you know, who it was, who was going to die, what the murder weapon was, and we didn't make that clear at all. So he was actually on stage. And he said to me that he was not trying to work out. You know, he wasn't trying. Like, he had, you know, natural sort of suppositions that the audience would probably have, but he wasn't actively trying to. It would have just gone pear-shaped, I think, if he had done that.
Yeah, if you're thinking about it too much, you're going, I must work this out, because often you see in those Agatha Christies where, you know, they'll accuse someone who will then admit to some crime, but it's not the murder. In fact, we had a couple of those situations in our rehearsals.
Yes.
Where he would accuse someone and go, say, you know, Dan, it was you, and then you were not actually the murderer, but the best way to handle it was to actually go, oh, yes, you're right, I hated him, I was going to scare him by doing this, but I would never kill him. And so that was the signal.
I was guilty for this particular thing, but not for the crime.
Everyone always generally has a motive to do something
in
those mysteries.
Yeah.
Or in any impro at all, if it's a good impro.
Yeah.
So it was a way of, I think what I found the most interesting was ensuring in that first half while we set things up, everyone had adequate motives or reasons to be killed or be a killer.
Mm.
Eventually, obviously, because you find out who the murder victim is at the end of the first half, you move towards making it clear who the victim is going to be. But it's really fun to go, well, for example, me last night, I made a decision to try to be quite overt about my reason for wanting to kill. The victim was Michael, the fop.
Which was a wonderful Rupert scene. There's a wonderful scene where all the lights went off and everybody's in the manor and all the characters are running around, and then we cut to one room where Michael, you hear his voice, and he comes on and he goes, "Oh, I'm just stuck in this room. Oh,
hello there. What are you? What are you doing here?
Oh, I see. It's like that, is it?
Oh, no, get me away from that. Get me away. Anyway, and the lights go up, and his, because the murder weapon was a bowl of trifle. The lights go up, and he's drowned his face down in this bowl of trifle.
It was so wonderful. Like, probably the best offer I think we could have got for a murder weapon. Yeah. Just wonderfully, wonderfully appropriate and yet ironically funny.
Yeah, right?
Because a letter opener or a
cleaver
poker or cleaver is what you would expect for that. But to have drowned in a bowl of trifle was just...
And you guys got to select the murder weapon from a whole bunch.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of offers for the murder weapon and a whole bunch
of... Were there a lot of knives and blades and stuff? Or were they
not that
all...
many.
There were things like...
Most of them were either really weird...
Yeah, I would have expected them to be a whole bunch of things that you couldn't kill someone with.
I know there was the Chick Chick Boom Girl was on.
Yes!
There was a couple other ones.
The one for me I remember was... Well, see, a heel could have worked, but one was a skateboard. And so for my mind, you just can't do that. It's out of place. You want something that will match the time, and I think the best offers came from people who sort of got that. Oh, it's a dinner. It's Agatha Christie. It's a murder mystery. What could it be? I think one of the other offers that I liked that I put in there because I was shifting them through into the keep and don't keep piles. One was a sword from an ice sculpture, which I thought was really interesting.
Because that offers more than just why is that there in the first place?
And it also melts away, so you don't actually know what the murder weapon would be, potentially, when Agatha discarded.
Greg would never get that.
No,
it would have been fun to see him not get it, though.
I think, actually, the trifle was probably the most obvious murder weapon that we've had. Wonderful
puns.
We had a lovely moment of punning.
Greg,
he got his just desserts.
And then I said, this is not a trifling matter, it's a murder investigation. Then you came in and said something about cakes.
This really takes the cake.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And Dan sat in the audience and went, this is not good improv. What are they doing?
The audience loved it.
Lapped it up, the little tarts.
Was that another one?
They were very...
Yeah.
Hey!
Extra special bonus pun. But no, then you said, because I was why I came in that scene when it was punning, is I was trying to prove that my character knew about the secret passageway that you and Wastings and Agatha Holmes had just discovered. And so I said, the reason I've just come in through the, and Dave said, the back passage. and the audience just collapsed again. But it's wonderful that those moments, I think to me it proves how, and this might sound really wanky, but to me it proves how strong and consistent our improv is in the genre, that we're able to then go, here's a bit of a funny, punning moment, and the audience still stays with you.
And you can struggle out of it.
Yeah,
well, this is the thing. It didn't destroy the plot. It had no real relevance to the plot. It was just, we're going to stop, do a bit of a joke, and we're back to the story.
Yeah.
And, I thought it's the way that you do puns. The thing is, you can
have characters who make puns.
Yeah.
The problem is that when you pun in a scene and the character isn't punning and the scene goes skew it.
For me, it's because James Bond films, not just Agatha Christie films, but they often will have, death and then some sort of bizarre pun involved.
Yeah, yeah.
James Bond pushes someone in a bath, throws a toaster in with them, and shocking, shocking. Yeah. And people, the audiences expect it.
Yeah.
And they
like it when it comes. You want him to say big, dumb, stupid things.
Like Commando or something like that.
Have you seen Terminator Salvation?
Yes.
No.
Can I give away a bit?
Yes.
Are you going to see it?
No. That spoiler warning for Terminator Salvation.
Spoiler warning. There's a bit where Christian Bale, who's so angry.
He's not very good
in
that, actually.
He's just...
Sam Worthington's great.
But John
His lighting guy's good.
John Connor's like this!
Everything's shouting!
You can really understand why he went nuts at that sound guy or whatever, the cameraman.
He ratcheted it down a bit when he went out of character. It was still far too high.
But he goes and he's saying goodbye to his wife, and she says, oh, what will I tell the generals if you don't come back? And he turns around and just looks at her and pauses and then goes, I'll be back. And I was like, I didn't know it was going to be there, but I appreciate that you made the effort to squeeze that in.
That wasn't a spoiler warning. I thought you were going to talk about the bit when Arnold Schwarzenegger turns up.
Oh, right.
Arnold Schwarzenegger turns up is the best bit of the film.
Does he?
Yeah, CG, like 1984 Schwarzenegger.
Oh, so they didn't actually get...
I was wondering about that.
They didn't get the governor of California in.
Well, I don't think he's allowed to. Isn't there, really?
I know that
he wasn't... During the race, they weren't allowed to put Arnold Schwarzenegger movies on TV... Because for every minute...
Too awesome?
No.
I want this guy!
For every minute that an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie is on, where he's on screen, there has to be a 1 minute for the other...
for the Democrats.
Oh, okay.
So that counts as broadcast Republican marketing stuff. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Public access.
So him, like, beating the shit out of some Australian in Chamber Lala.
Dropping some guy off a cliff and I had to let him go. Vote Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of California.
It was. I just love the idea. I want to be part of a world where the governor has to take a couple of days off to go stand and be naked in a film set somewhere. Come here, and he strolls out, and you see it sort of pan up with the modesty light.
Yeah.
He walks out of fog with the modesty light over the groinal area, and then you just see him sort of like very
glowering.
That's the word, glowering. Looks side to side, and his eyes sort of glow. And
I think I saw Peter Beattie in a very similar piece of video.
Oh, is that a joke?
Isn't this an impro show?
Agatha Holmes.
Yes.
Agatha Holmes.
The other thing about Agatha Holmes is that it was the first show back for a couple of years, at least, for the Luke Rimmel's one.
Yes.
Who hadn't played for ages.
And what a delight.
He just comes back into it.
And what a delight. And everyone
That's why you weren't in it, Dan, because I wanted to get Luke in, because I hadn't played. He was really good last night.
He was very good.
Yeah. And because the reason I got him as well is because, A, he'd done the Agatha Holmes with us in rehearsal that I was talking about earlier. And he knows that genre better than anyone else, probably, in that.
And he's perfect for the character, too.
And he's really,
like, you needed a great big sort of corporate.
Over email, like I said to everybody, come up with a character that you want to play, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, there's two people in particular. I was going, I hope Wade wants to be the butler. And I hope Luke wants to be the big, blustery army general guy.
I think the two of them really stole the show.
They took the biscuit.
Everyone remembered. I think people loved Greg and as Agatha Holmes, mm-hmm. And your relationship with him as Wastings Dave. But yeah, I don't think people were going home going, "Gee, Lady Augusta," which is my character.
I think people were going home going,
"Wade is so cool," and Luke was so funny, you know, because they had like their great moments.
That's the thing. In any long form, some of the characters are going to drift to the front, and if you're a good improviser and you're not one of them, you have to sort of step back and support. And you can't sort of take that sort of limelight.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I got to wear a fabulous costume. And both Amy and I were wandering around downstairs going, we want to wear this all the time.
Yeah.
We want to wear this every day.
Yeah.
You'd certainly stand out if you went clubbing in there.
Oh, that would be so much fun. We should go to Cloudland dressed like that. That would be great. Oh, God, that would be good.
Cloudland is strange. I felt like I was walking into the Myst video game.
There. You've been in there.
Yeah.
Oh. I've never been.
I just went in for lunch one day. Or for a drink in the
afternoon.
Isn't
it like $50 to get in or something?
No, not during the day. $50 to get in?
Yeah, I heard some outrageous cover charge.
That is outrageous.
It's ridiculous.
Maybe it was like a party or something.
It's massively kitsch.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous
place.
Isn't
it like one wall that's one style and the other wall is like something completely different and there's a waterfall and trees and there
are it's like you're in a chapter of the Myst video game. Weird sort of... And the bathrooms are ridiculous. You go into the bathrooms and it's pitch black. And you can't even find where you're supposed to go to the bathroom, and then
you wake up and you're in a bowl of trifle.
and then the sink is like a magic one where you put your hands in it, and water suddenly sprays at your hands, and then runs across the desk, and then down
falls away. Yeah.
But it's across a curve, and I was washing my hands, and all the water would just spray down onto my pants. it offended me from a design point of view.
It's giving you that designer just had an accident look.
Yeah, it's form over function, and I left Cloudland feeling very angry.
Well, there you go. Cloudland, if you were thinking about sponsoring the End Time podcast...
You can get bucked!
You probably want to look for your comedy improv elsewhere. Wouldn't it be cool, though, to do a show there? That would be a cool place to do a show, though. Some sort of big fancy club with all these cool people.
I wonder if there's a plate part of it. Because it's very tall.
Yeah.
It's very tall and strange.
Like you.
That is uncalled for.
Maybe it was a bridge too far that way.
Whoops.
So are we done with Agatha Holmes?
Great show. Yeah. Go and have a look at Facebook if you're on it.
Some great photos. I presume we'll probably put them up through the Impro Mafia page.
Hopefully we'll put some up on Impro Mafia. Great group shots of us all in our finery.
Mm.
It's lovely to be asked to be in this one. It was a lovely show to do. I just had so much fun being in it. People who weren't in it really missed out. Sorry, Dan. I don't mean, I'm just, I mean, it, yeah, it was great. I do mean it a bit, but no, I'm just having a land of you.
I wish my show hadn't been knocked back by Wade. Then I wouldn't let you be in it.
What was your show?
I was going to do a panel show, like a quiz show.
This is the last time I'm having two other people on the panel. Because if they're just going to team up against me, I'm not going to enjoy this.
You haven't had a proper swing at Nat yet. I said I'll join up with you. I'm going where the power is.
No, I was going to do a panel show.
You have the power.
What style? Like how? Like modern?
Yeah, like kind of a Never Mind the Buzzcocks type of thing, but with mime challenges and quizzes and all that sort of panel show type of deal. Like a music bit and a movies bit.
Mm. It'd be fun.
Fast money.
Mm. Could do multimedia and stuff.
But Wade decided it wasn't impro enough and it wasn't worth risking. Mm. So
you know he's going to listen to this. Maybe. He may have dropped out by now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no.
Hey, Wade, if you're still with us, thanks for tuning in.
Anybody else as well.
Thanks for getting this far. But he's going to be sitting there going...
It is a long podcast.
He's going to be sitting there going, oh, why did that... Oh, that, oh, I'm going to compose an email. No, it's just not worth it. And Wade, if you haven't reacted like that, you soon will.
But it works out nicely anyway because I've been invited to host another panel show. So
oh, yes. What have you been asked to do, Mr. Beeston?
What's this?
This was after I did Impro Gladiators the first time. I got off stage and these two young pups ran up to me and went, oh, we really enjoyed you in the show. They did it like that. And I'm like, oh, well, thanks very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And they said, oh, we're doing this TV show, panel show, and we want you to host and come and do a screen test with us. And I'm like, it's a setup. Do you do this to everyone
on
their first night at Impro Gladiators? But no, I ended up doing a screen test in a park. And...
How young were these pups?
Oh, they're like 19 or something. Yeah, okay. They're adorable. They're so full of vim and vigour. So I'm really excited about it, actually. Yeah, I can't think of anything more fun than hosting a panel show.
Impro?
No.
So everyone not else anymore. Is scripted, but you're not.
What? No,
everyone
no one's scripted.
Else is scripted. Your panel show.
Yeah.
It's not scripted.
It's not scripted at all. It's a panel show.
Right.
Talking and answering questions and playing weird theatre games and
cool.
That sort of stuff.
Have fun with that.
I will.
Yeah, no, it sounds like fun. I sound really insincere, yeah. Don't I? I don't mean to.
Have fun with that. We'll be sitting here gloating about Agatha Holmes.
We're very inclusive at Impro Mafia.
No, if
I know some people think we're not, but we really are.
No, quite seriously, I would have invited you if it wasn't for the fact that I had enough people.
Quite frankly, I was in the audience watching you guys do an amazing job thinking, I would just fuck it up if I was involved in this.
That was our reasoning too.
Yeah,
really.
No, I understand.
I'm just being nice, really.
Now, speaking of me getting left out of stuff, you guys were invited to go down to the Nationals.
Oh, God, we've still got more podcasts.
Yes. Let's get to our proper part of the show.
The Enmore Theatre, Sydney, May the 9th.
Was it?
It was.
I remember the 9th bit, that the Enmore was all foggy.
Oh, really?
Now, the Enmore seats... 2,000 people or something, isn't it?
Yes.
How was that?
1,800. Biggest audience I've ever played to.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Dave.
And was it strange doing it? Because you guys would have played to maybe 200 people before.
Yeah, I think the max I've ordered. I think in Canberra I played to about 250 or so there, auditorium before that.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, look, it was strange. It's big and honking huge. And
yep.
I think at the very beginning there was. A lot of smoke machines came out.
They went nuts with the smoke.
There was smoke everywhere, and we couldn't see anything. We couldn't see, like, the audience.
I love a venue who's just got a new smoke machine. they got access to a smoke machine when I went down for the Halloween Classic the first time, down in Melbourne 4 years ago or something. And the snoggers were like, oh, this thing's got to have smoke in it. And they went, and the smoke started coming out, and they're like, oh, it's taking a while. We'll ramp it up a bit, and the smoke starts coming out. And they're like, okay, that's enough, and turned it off. And it just kept coming.
Yeah.
And the entire room was just soup.
Yeah.
They had the smoke machines running full tilt for about 10 minutes before the curtain opened. So when the curtain opened, it just went into the audience.
I was speaking to people afterwards. I had some friends came and watched us. They said that from the audience perspective, it wasn't quite as excessive.
Oh,
we
okay.
had the lights down.
Well, I'd imagine.
So from our perspective,
it was
a lot worse.
Massive. You know, it wasn't massive.
Yeah. I think they noticed the fog being rain. But yeah, no, once after a round or two, I felt like it wasn't quite as crazy an experience. It was just like playing on another stage.
Yeah,
got used to it.
We should probably explain. We went down for the Theatre Sports Nationals, what it is, and why we were there. We got invited by Tom Dunstan, who was the captain of the Queensland team, with the assistance and permission of Roger Beams, who's sort of the main contact for the Impro Australia people when they do these big interstate competitions.
Yep,
and very kindly invited us both down, which was very exciting. And we went down. They had an apartment, so we actually shared a flat in Glebe with Paddy Styles and Rick Brown from Melbourne,
nice.
Which was lots of fun, except I woke up on the Sunday morning and Paddy never came home.
Oh. What goes on
I
tour?
I hope she got home eventually. I hope you're still out there, Paddy. No, she ended up at the cast party staying over somewhere, but I woke up the next day going, oh, Paddy's gone. But we had gone down with Tom. We were playing against Sydney team, who were representing New South Wales, a Perth team for WA, and the Melbourne guys for Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And we were Queensland.
They were rocking.
Perth absolutely rocked. They were awesome. Just, you know, absolute crowd favourites. Really went balls to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic stuff. And I think, although I think you said your favourites were Victoria. And
they felt more like the players.
The players.
The audience, the great thing about it, we can't get last.
Just gloss over that.
But I think the audience genuinely enjoyed all four teams. And that was, there was competition in the fact that it was four teams playing against each other and they had score tallies, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
But we weren't playing. It was a competition at all.
It was a big
ensemble.
Was
more than one scene where every single player was involved in the scene, you know, helping out with, like, being a piece of set or extra characters or what have you. It's a great...
Dave and I played the aisle in a wedding scene.
Yes.
Two halves of an aisle. So watch for that on the video. but it was a big ensemble show and everyone supported. And I think it was helped by the fact that this year they only had three people per team. Yeah. In the past, I believe they've had four people per team.
Uh-huh.
And so when you've got four people, you tend to have enough people in your team to do everything. When you cut it back to three, it really changes the dynamics. And it means a lot more people can just run in. And there was a lot of talk before the show started about people coming up going, hey, we're crashing your scene. Wait, you know, look out for us. And you can crash ours. You can crash ours.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of this. We've got you back. We've got you back. There's a lot of pre-show camaraderie and, hey, let's just all get in there and have a good time. So when other people came in, there was no sense of, what are you doing? It was all like, hey, join us. Yeah, this is great. You know, thanks for coming on. Or most times, if not all times, they would come on with some fantastic physical.
Yeah, I think we have maybe one scene which didn't have anybody else from another team in it.
Yeah.
That was cool. That was really cool.
We had...
I know two, because our first thing was just word at a time.
I think, what I was so pleased about is that we did one scene, which I think was our team's best scene for the night, which was... I was playing a little girl. It was based on it was their technical round where they give you something physical or something, a visual cue. Or
it was some kind of extra.
Some teams got props. One team got lights. We got a sound cue. And it was the pianist playing a little musical tune.
Mm-hmm.
So I took up the role of a little girl. Tom saying, he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me, he loves me not, with a flower. Tom came in as my dad going, yeah, that's right, I don't love you anymore. Then Dave came in as my mum going, I don't love you anymore because you've driven your father away.
Oh, nice.
And you have to sing a song to bring him back. So I was like, oh, God, I've got to sing a song. And... most of this year I've had problems with my rhyming in songs. I found it very difficult. And if ever there was a time for my rhyming skills to kick in, this was the night. And
in front of 2,000 people.
Thank God they did. And I sang this song about playing a piano and how it was fun and something like that. And I rhymed everything and it finished and there was this big round of applause. Well, I remember it to be big.
Maybe. No, it was big.
This is big round of applause because I was playing this little girl singing about how a piano is going to come home and her family will be back together. And everyone went, yay! And I just went, I never want to leave this stage ever again. Ever.
And then Tom and I kissed each other and they did
That's
a different
true.
Kind of applause.
And that was a much bigger laugh.
Nice.
But yeah, I was so happy with that scene because I was like, oh no, I actually used the skills that I've been trained to do. They came out. I didn't freak out. I didn't lose it. I was able to rhyme. I was so I haven't been able to since. For love nor money. But I'm hoping I'll work on it. But it was a really good night. And Dave was just a champion. He was so calm before the show. But someone told me that since you were a bit nervous, or is that?
Yeah, I was nervous.
You didn't show it. My nervousness took the form of constantly straightening, then trying to curl my hair, then straightening it, then going back to curling it, then straightening it again, and then going, oh, God, none of it's working. I'm going to look hideous.
Everybody looked good, and some people in the audience thought you looked good, remember?
You had a suitor.
I don't know how true this is. One of the judges was David Collins from the Umbilical Brothers, the curly head one from the Umbilical Brothers. And we were all in the wine bar afterwards, and I didn't kind of want to be that person who goes, oh, yeah, you're great, hi. So I was just kind of wandering around and chatting to people. It was him who actually stopped me as I walked past and said, oh, hey, I just wanted to say well done. It was a great show. It was, you know, really good. And I was like, oh, hello. And I introduced myself. And he said, yeah, no, it was really good because I was sitting next to Andrew Denton and his son. And his son said at one point, oh, yeah, that Queensland girl's hot.
Yeah.
And I went, are you having a lend of me? Are you taking the mickey out of me? Because what? And he's like, no, seriously.
Your son?
And then he goes, and then he turns to someone next to him and goes, how old's Andrew Denton's son? I don't know. But anyway, he thought you were good looking. And I'm like, seriously? And he's like, why would I make that up? That's a fair point. So, yeah.
I like that. See, in my mind, it's just Andrew Denton, but younger. And I'm like, you probably wouldn't have wanted him to like you.
like a tiny little Andrew Denton at high school.
I'm quite prepared.
Nerdy glasses and skinny ass.
He's like 15 or 16. I'm quite prepared to go to parties with him. If Andrew Denton's listening, I am prepared to go to your son's formals. You know, look, let's talk. Let's do a deal.
Yes, well, I looked him up on the internet and I'm like, he doesn't look like Andrew Denton at all.
You did the Chaser Boys a great turn. I'm here. I'm happy to do comedy. I'm happy to fulfill the...
I will also go up with Andrew Denton's son, if it will further me.
It was just such a bizarre thing to hear, you know. It really sort of... don't get me wrong, it was quite thrilling, but at the same time, you're like... What? I never would have thought that I would hear that sentence in my life.
It was a very, very fun.
Yeah, so it was a really, really good show. And, you know, it was such great fun talking with all the other improvisers and chatting.
Oh, it was heaps of fun.
It was a very, very good show. And it was fun hearing your friends' reactions the day after. And a friend of mine came to see it as well, and what they liked and what they thought was really good. And, you know, bits that we thought weren't that strong, they were, oh, that bit was great. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So my thing was, and I think Dave shares this view, but I will confirm this, my thing is I'd like to do it again. The reason is I think I will be better this time.
Yeah, you know,
I would like to do it again so you know what you're actually going down there to face.
Mm.
Because
it's the unknown which is so terrifying.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. I would say I was nervous and I wasn't. Like, I wasn't worried so much about the performing. It was all the other things.
Mm. It's just sort of like you're coming down and thinking, like, what style of playing should be hit? Like, what? How do you act on this sort of stage? You know, and you begin to work that out. And our best scenes were like the third and the fourth.
Yeah, and they were playing proper theatre sports where you have to do things like challenge each other. And, of course, we haven't thought of games to challenge each other with really very often at all. So to sit there going, well, what's a game that's a physical game that's a ballet? Yeah, we'll do a ballet. And then the final round was this fantasy scene where you had to play
one player's fantasy.
And Tom, the year before, had done a scene where he was nude. Completely nude.
Yeah.
And the rest of the players covered his man bits.
Yeah.
Now, for some reason, I had a couple of people then saying to me, are you going to do the nude scene?
Yeah.
And I was like, seriously, I don't really think that
I wonder Andrew
like,
Denton
no,
was
should.
So excited. His son was so excited.
No, there was no nudity.
Not on stage.
But I couldn't think of a fantasy. It was like, and Tom Dunstan is saying to me, what have you always wanted to do on stage? And I was sitting there going, I honestly can't tell you. Like, I have never sort of sat down and gone, what do I really want to do on an improv stage? I just always take the opportunities and go, hey, let's do this, or this would be fun. I sort of haven't got this list of things I'd like to do in improv.
I'd like to do a song that is much better than could possibly be made up on the spot. That's what I'd like to do.
Well, yes.
That's my fantasy scene.
But you can't walk on and say that.
No.
Well, I'm going to do the best song that's ever been done in an improv scene.
Yeah. And you can all applaud me when it's finished.
just watch me crash and burn.
Maybe it was because I was a bit frozen and going, I don't know how to answer that question.
I didn't either.
Of my fantasy scenes involve me being the best absolutely at everything ever. So could we do a scene where it's the best day of my life and everyone loves me? That would be good. That's about the fantasy, as much fantasy as I get. Maybe it shows my imagination has been destroyed by years of television.
Years of having it sucked out by improv.
But it was such a good experience. I'm so pleased that Beck and John Knowles from Sydney and Cale Bain, who's a very gracious host.
Cale's a dude.
He is a dude. He's quite a dude. That they all gave us the time of day and so nice to us. So they said lots of lovely things about us. They were really pleased that we came down and very complimentary towards us at Impro Mafia. And we were really plugging Prognosis Death while we were down there. Well, I was. I think Dave was being slightly more restrained. But I was going, we do this show. We throw fake blood at each other. It's fantastic. You have to come.
But we don't know when we're going to do it. That's the impro.
It's a surprise every night.
Speaking of Prognosis Death, it's coming back.
It's coming back.
It's going into relapse.
Yeah.
Posters are on order.
Oh, really?
Yes. Sweet. Well, the show's in 3 weeks or something.
Oh, yeah, it's like the first two Thursday, Friday, Saturdays of July.
Yeah.
Yeah. Second, third, and fourth. 9th, 10th, 11th.
Yes, and there's changes afoot, I understand. Like,
ooh,
some
mystery.
People may not be as you remember.
Time's moved on. What has happened to the good people of St. Love Hospital while... You know,
actually, that reminds me, Chris Anderson has very pleasantly thrown together a medley of all the different tunes that he used
all
for
character
all of our characters.
Fantastic.
So I will pop that in after the credits of End Time.
After the credits, it's probably a good
this
idea.
This will be the longest non-drunk End Time ever.
Well, we can change that.
Yeah, it's not over yet.
Well, actually, I've got some beers.
End Time! You have been listening to End Time. You've been listening to Natalie Bohensky. Natalie has a blog. Don't put your hand up. It's audio. Natalie has a blog at girlclumsy.com. You've also been listening to David Massingham. You can check out the Sexy Detective sketch comedy show at thesexydetective.com. I'm Dan Beeston. I am still doing webcomics at invisiblespiders.com. For news about Impro in Brisbane, visit impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for End Time is pleasantly provided by CivicNet Web Design. Why are you not registering?
Because I'm a vampire and I don't show up on tape.
There you go.
Alright, you might have to boost my levels.
They're boosted as high as they can go.
Okay, I'll just talk like this.
It'll make for a nice, natural, easygoing conversation.
I'm registered.
Yeah, I put the music in afterwards.
I'm just helping you, and I'm just helping.
Dave's being good,
paranoid.
I did, and there
the gleam
were
in your eye.
There were some real.
Weren't you saying how much it sucked the other night?
That's what I heard on the podcast. Interesting listening to this.
Because if we're sitting here censoring ourselves, then we're not doing a good enough job.
I've heard some of the stuff you do leave in before.
Oh, it's always fun to see Luke Allen after he's heard the podcast that he's in. Yeah. You said left that in.
I edit that out.
I wasn't listening. What'd you say?
Nothing. Let's move
edit
on.
The first 20 minutes out. Let's
edit
go.
The first 20 minutes and let's reset to go
were
again.
You discussing your relationship?
Yes. It was probably the bit about Luke Allen we should probably cut anyway.
I'll make those decisions. Thank you very much.
And he will. That's the problem. He'll make these decisions. Heard the results before.